Hey, y'all, guess what time it is? It's the Grawlix Saves the World time.
All right, the Grawlix saves the world.
That's right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. We're getting big. Our worries are mixed as has the cake. Well, the Grawlix saves the world.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to the Grawlix Saves the World, but a little bit different this time around. I'm Adam Caton Holland, and with me is my buddy, Andrew Orvidal. Introduce yourself.
It's me, Andrew. I wasn't sure who was your buddy, because there's other people that are on here. So,
if you ever are in doubt about who's my buddy in a group situation, it's you, number one, and I need the other people on this call to know that.
Wow,
okay, Andrew,
huge,
you
huge.
Number one. So you're my buddy. Woo! You're here with me. I'm thrilled Ben Roy is not here today. I'm thrilled about that. And with us, chiming in occasionally, is our producer, Ron. You want to say hi, Ron?
Hi there. Hi, everybody.
We're trying something new this episode. Listen, all these episodes, it's just us spouting bullshit. We don't really know facts at all. We just think we do. Ben's like, I saw a documentary 5 years ago. Here's some things from it. And we're like, "That no one knows if that's legit or not." So we figured, let's try a new thing. We're toying with names, but basically the Grawlix get the facts. Right, Andrew? Is that the name?
The Grawlix get the facts. The Grawlix get their shit together.
The Grawlix go legit.
The Grawlix interview an expert. Something in that vein.
So right. Enjoy it. First installment. We did a plastics episode.
Recently.
May have heard it.
Yes.
It was very
and people were depressed. Yeah. The feedback we got on it was that it was depressing, and we agreed. Yeah. But as we mentioned in that podcast, we know someone who knows a lot about this shit.
What we kept hitting upon is recycling. And so we thought we'd bring in our friend Will Hancock, who works in this field and can give us some hard facts and maybe make us less depressed. So, Will, welcome to Grawlix Get the Facts. How are you, bud?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it. Glad to kind of gloss over some of the bullshit that Ben was placing in the world.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean,
please,
I feel
please
like
don't stop eating fish. You're going to kill a lot of economies.
whoa.
And they're paranoid conspiracy theories most of the time, Will. It's just him in his basement sort of parroting shit he read that day. So why don't you tell people what you do?
So I am the stationery sales director, and I oversee the sales of large commercial grade recycling equipment, but I'm also a consultant to many different industries in recycling. My main focus currently is construction and demolition waste, because about 60% of what we send to landfills is new construction. And if you look around Denver, you see all the cranes, you see all the new buildings going up. There's a lot of material that comes off of those job sites that has high value and can be recycled. So I'm actually working on a project right now where we'll be building a C&D recycling facility at 60th and Broadway in Denver.
What's C&D? Construction and development?
Construction and demolition material. Sorry.
I'm
so used to using monikers. I forget when I'm
talking. Oh, I knew it. I knew it. Sorry,
yeah,
Adam didn't
know. Sorry.
Yeah.
Listen, ACH asks questions.
So I work for a company called ComTech Americas, and I run a subdivision called Plexus Recycling Technologies, which just essentially sells equipment that complements the ComTech Americas line. ComTech is a company that's based out of Austria, and they build all kinds of equipment. They have shredders for landfill reduction. They have compost turners, plastic separation for compost, screens that segregate and separate the material into different sizes. So when you go to Home Depot and you buy a bag of compost, most likely it was ran through a piece of equipment that I sell.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah. Are there any robots involved?
There are. It just not so much in the organic side, but I sell a robot manufactured by a company called Zen Robotics. They're based out of Helsinki, Finland, and they use three different kinds of technology. They use near infrared, which sees color on a much larger spectrum than the human eye. They use a high resolution camera. We have a 3D laser that maps where everything is on the belt. And then we have metal detection underneath the belt too, so we can tell the difference between different alloys of metal. So we can sort copper, tin, brass from other wow. types of metal. And then we have a fast picker, which utilizes what's called a Venturi system. So you're essentially forcing air to a single spot and then creating a vacuum. And that's mainly utilized in single stream recycling, which is everything that you put in the purple bin here in Denver.
Well, can you have sex with any of those robots?
Not yet, but we are close. We are close.
I feel like that fast picker is what's going to be chasing us in the future. 10 years from now, there'll be a fast picker trying to get you in an alley because they've been... They think that we need
Kids
to be recycled.
Get inside. It's coming down the block.
The heavy picker uses a pneumatic gripper that's metal, you don't want to get near that. That's gonna leave some scars.
That's terrifying. Okay, well, don't play near the heavy or the fast picker.
No, but I also design, engineer, and build large scale recycling facilities all across the country. So that's I dabble in plastics. I dabble in single stream. I dabble in compost, construction and demolition waste, municipal solid waste, MSW, and pretty much anything that is recyclable. I've worked in the field for about 13 years now.
We should also point out that Will is like such a important part of the comedy community here in Denver. And
I thought you were going to say tall and handsome. I was like, yeah, he's tall.
He's tall and handsome, but he's like, he's not gorgeous. Just a recycling wonk, guys. He's a cool, rounded guy.
He helps with High Plains.
He helps with the High Plains Comedy Festival. He's a great, great dude to have around. And I'm so glad that you have this area of expertise to fill us in, because I'm very curious about it. And you brought it to the purple recycling bins, which I think is where a lot of people can sort of relate. I don't think most people know about, you know, industrial recycling. You heard our episode. Yep. It was very hard for us to go a day without using plastic. Obviously, we know plastic is an issue in the world. What can we do? And I think any person who's just a normal citizen, their first line of defense is like, well, I recycle, so I'm doing my part. Is that true? How much of what we throw into these purple bins is being recycled?
Yeah.
And how can we do it better? Like, I have specific questions, but I'm curious, macro, what you think about that.
Can I preface Adam's question with just a little bit more vague question? What happens to the shit that we put in that recycling bin once it leaves our house? I want to take a tour of a water bottle's life once I dump it into that recycling bin outside my house.
So everything that you put in the purple bin gets collected by a truck and goes to one of multiple material recycling facilities. They call them MRFs in my world. But essentially that material gets collected. It goes to a facility that has equipment that I sell. It may not be mine because there's many competitors that I deal with, but...
if it's not yours, it ain't fucking worth the time. Yeah. Okay, I'll just say that right now.
And I agree completely. But that material goes into a facility, gets dumped on the ground, and then it goes across, it gets put into a bunker. That bunker then feeds a recycling line. And from there, it goes across what's called a ballistic separator. And what a ballistic separator does is it separates two-dimensional material from three-dimensional material. So any cardboards, papers, textiles, anything that's in there that's two-dimensional and has light density goes one direction. Anything that's heavy and has weight, like your plastic bottles, your tin cans, your laundry detergent bottles, anything that's in there that has any kind of weight to it bounces backwards. And then there's holes in the paddle that collect the fines, the smaller residual material that, you know, it has value, but it goes to a different processing line. So from there, then it goes across what's called the two-dimensional, goes across what's called the fiber line. And that fiber line is trying to get the number ones and the number two papers. So that's like your newspapers, anything that's like newspaper value, or your office papers, things of those. Those will get put into a bunker, and then it goes into what's called a baler. And what a baler does is it just compresses everything into a cube, and then that cube's put onto a truck, and then that truck takes it to a paper mill, and that paper mill turns it back into the paper that you're reading. So most of the newspaper that you read is 100% recycled paper.
That's cool.
Gross.
So if you ever see office paper that's a little bit more like, it's not white, it's not bleached white, that's recycled paper as well. And then any of the cardboard, because we are in the age of COVID and Amazon, cardboard has jumped increasingly in price. So cardboard used to be down around $90 a ton. It's now $160 a ton that somebody like Waste Management can sell back to the paper mills.
So the package you get in the mill, if you recycle it, is going back out to become a package again.
Yep. Yeah. And Amazon is heavily invested in paper mills and processing plants and things of this nature. So they know they're trying to create a closed circuit environment because they know they're generating the most. I mean, how many times have you gotten the package from Amazon and it's something this big, but it's in a box like this?
Well, Will, I've been boycotting Amazon since they canceled Those Who Can't. So
I understand.
Don't worry about it. I haven't gotten a lot.
I like, for all of the terrible crimes Amazon has done in the world, Adams.
Nothing wrong Adam's, with the company. God, love their style.
Truly.
But they passed on those who can't, and the I pettiest, can't support.
I love it. Wow.
So that material gets separated, and then that material has high recyclable value. And then the containers that bounce backwards, those are all heavily recyclable. And natural HDPET, which is kind of like your milk jugs, anything that has kind of like a milky kind of look, the plastic.
The number ones and number twos, right?
Right, yeah. Those have high value. Your water bottles have high value. But the thing that I can say most is try to take the cap off, because what happens...
That's what I was going to ask about, yeah.
It's just better, because what happens is that that piece gets compressed. And as it goes across the sort line and it goes to a robot, the robot has to be able to pick it up. So when it sees the plastic bottle, if it's flattened, it's much easier to grab. If you leave the cap on, it tends to retain air, and it just kind of rolls around, and it just creates havoc. I mean, it'll get picked, but
Please tell me you have video footage of these robots playfully trying to pick up one of these water bottles.
I can share a screen and show you a video.
This is frustrating.
This is adorable.
So it just...
I am curious about that exact thing, like, okay, say on your standard water bottle, I always remove the cap, but like, you know, there's that little sort of on the neck, there's a little piece of plastic. Do you pull that off?
No.
Do you pull the wrapper off?
It's mainly just to get the air out of the bottle. So it's just easy. It's just easier, and it just processes much easier. And the reason that we got away from plastic straws was because it was going into the fines material, and there's no real way to segregate those plastic straws. It's very hard because they roll around. They're not very, you know, it's just hard to collect them autonomously. So it's you know, you're not going to pay someone to stand there and pick plastic straws. Now, the paper straws, obviously, they can go to composting. They can go back into the paper mill. So I know they're a pain in the ass, and I know they suck. But listen, you're doing a good thing, because half of that residual ends up in the landfill. So every time you use a plastic straw, it doesn't go anywhere but the landfill. There's no end of life for a plastic straw. And that's why there was so much kind of motion behind it. Plastic bags, the reason everyone's against plastic bags, they have no commodity value and they wrap. So a lot of MRFs use what's called a disc screen. So those disc screens spin. And what happens is it catches like the handle of the plastic bag and it just wraps around the shaft. So there are MRFs in the country where every 2 hours they have to shut down and cut all the plastic bags off of that screen. So it slows down production.
Wow.
It slows down the process. So it's a pain in the butt for the processors. And that's why they kind of got behind banning.
That's right.
That's just all money. Then it becomes financially untenable.
Exactly.
Yeah. I skip the middleman. I just feed mine directly to pelicans. Down at Mead Reservoir.
You got in a lot of trouble for doing that, haven't you?
Pelicans at Mead Reservoir?
They can digest them just fine.
Birds.
Here's something I heard, and I was wondering if it was true. I heard that if your recycling is not washed and totally clean, it gets put into the landfill.
So yes, so it is good to wash out your tin cans, wash out what, like if you open a can of tomatoes or things like that, just rinse it out. It takes 2 seconds, throw it in the thing. Because what also happens is that attracts, when you go to like a facility, you'll see all these millions of birds. It's not because of the it's because of the organics that are in the waste. So in single stream, you do not want to put any kind of food product. Even like, I know people just throw I'm throwing it into the purple bin. It's a plastic container. Yeah, but you've got a half a sandwich in there that attracts rodents. It attracts, scavengers, things of those natures to these facilities. And if you can, you know, if everybody just took a little extra time, it would make it a lot easier to recycle. Now, when you said in the episode where people don't know where it goes once it leaves their house, that's the problem, is educating the masses about the right way to recycle. And I spend a lot of my time on boards of like, how do we educate? What do we do? How do we reach the people? You know, and it's tough because people don't care. It's gone. Once it's in that bin, I recycled. I put it in the purple bin. Yeah, but did you?
Yeah.
No, exactly. That's why we're doing this, because like I think a lot of people have good intentions, but if they're just actually, you know, unintentionally causing waste, then they're fucking everything up. So what would be your big takeaways? Like, take the cap off your water bottles.
Yep. Wash the food out. If it's going into the purple bin, make sure there's no food. That's the biggest thing. Even if you think, oh, it's just a little sauce, it's still contaminants. And what it does is it just has to be processed more down the line. So you can't, if you wash out the can, it goes into a bunker, gets baled into a steel bale, it goes right to a foundry, they turn it back into cans. So it's a much easier process. Now, if there's organics involved, the material has to be washed, which takes a lot of water, which is a burden on the environment. And the water that is washed off, it has to go through such a heavy filtration process, or it just goes into the wastewater treatment facility. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things. You're using more energy to recycle than it costs to make the product. And that's where a lot of people, and I know that you guys were saying, like, what happens to plastic? The biggest thing every year at MIT is, what do we do about the plastic in the ocean? So there is a multitude of companies, and you can easily find this on the internet if you want to search. There are systems that go out and essentially, like, rake the ocean, suck it in, segregate it. So they have essentially recycling facilities on the ocean where they pull it in, separate it, bale it, and create things. There's, and I know a lot of the problem with the ocean plastic is, you know, it gets to such a micronic level that you can't see it with the human eye. And that comes from, like, those, I don't know if you remember those body washes that had the little plastic beads and it was supposed to exfoliate you. Well, that goes into the water. I mean, it goes in.
Oh, shit.
Man, we are so smart. We are absolutely crushing this planet.
I mean, humans are the fucking worst. Like, straws. It's straws. It's an unnecessary item.
Straws rule. All right. No. We can agree they're bad for the environment. They're a cool invention.
Clearly, none of you have to wear lipstick. Come on. Straws are amazing.
Think of being there in, like, 1917, the first time you got to drink out of a straw. Get the fuck out of here.
I don't mind a little lipstick on the cup. It's sexy. It's a cool thing.
Well, that's because you don't dab and you leave a mark everywhere you go. Why don't you blot with a paper towel, you Philistine?
I want you to know I've been there and I've consumed.
So I don't know if you guys read any of those links that I sent you.
Oh, yeah. I'll put a link to those in the show notes.
Those are two companies that I work with that are kind of driving the future of plastic recycling. One is Fulcrum Bioenergy. They have a plant in Sparks, Nevada. They essentially take in the MSW plastic, the stuff that goes into the black bin. So then they pull out the organics. They get the plastic away from it. Because a lot of the stuff that goes into the black bin, you know, it's
what everybody thinks is trash.
Not everything gets recycled. People are lazy. They throw stuff in the black bin that shouldn't be in the black bin, when really the only thing that should be in the black bin is your bag of food scraps or anything that can't be recycled. But we all know that, you know, it's easier just to throw it in the trash can and say goodbye to it. So Fulcrum Bio.
Hey, food scraps you can compost.
Exactly. And there's a composting program in Denver. We have a green bin that goes to A1 Organics out in Keensburg. And that gets composted by them. And I've sold them equipment. They have compost turners, screens. They have what's called a hurricane that we sell. And essentially what that does is, when food scraps and things come in, it's usually in plastic bags or containers and things of that nature. And this equipment essentially puts air through it, lifts it, sucks it out. There's magnetic head pulleys to pull any metal out. There's a rock belt that is adjustable incline so we can get rocks out. So what comes out at the end of the hurricane is wood, essentially, that can go back into the composting process. And the reason that I said something about the composting packaging, it's bullshit.
What? Wait, what?
What?
Yeah, it's a
compostable plastics?
$1 billion bullshit problem. Because the problem with
wait a minute, you're talking about, like, takeout stuff that people say it's compostable.
And I said, that's what I said compostable? To you guys. I was like, I'll drag you out to Keensburg and I'll show you that it's not compostable. Like, and that's a problem. I'm probably going to get fired for this.
You don't have to drag us. We are Keensburg guys.
Yeah.
Andrew's been feeding just find back us there. Pelicans in Keensburg for 15 years.
So in a windrow situation, it is not compostable. And when I say a windrow, it's essentially a triangle of material that goes down for a long, like a mile long path. That's a windrow. It looks like a triangle, but it runs the course of the field. And what that does, it sits there and it cooks. And then we have turners that pull the material that's warm on the inside and put it on the outside, so you can control the temperature of it and you cook it. What happens with compostable plastics and compostable containers is, when that turner comes through and rotates the material out, all that plastic and stuff gets lifted to the outside of the windrow. The wind catches it, carries it away, and then you've got problems with livestock eating it. You've got it's a big problem.
So the same reason this is plastics. Heartbreaking.
That's why I said you guys are going to be more fucking depressed than when we started.
Compostable to-go containers are flying off the machine and killing cattle,
being eaten by llamas in Keensburg. You heard it here first.
Fuck. When it does work is what's called in-vessel composting. So when material, it's put into a bunker. The door is closed. It stays in that container for 21 days. The temperature is controlled. The moisture is controlled. Everything is controlled. And that material, that compostable package, can break down. that material has to stay at 190 degrees for at least 20 days to break down past the point of what it is currently. If it doesn't, it doesn't break down. So then you have
so it will compost, but it's a matter of where it's
how
going.
You compost it. That's the thing. Yes, it's compostable. Yes, it breaks down, but it has to be composted this way.
And our green bins go to Keensburg, where it's not composted that way.
I'm not saying that. You didn't. I didn't say that. I never said that. Did you hear me say that? I didn't say that.
Well, wait a minute. Would it be better then if I get a compostable takeout carton to put it into the recycling?
Yes, because then it can be sorted and put back into compostable products.
This is huge. So that there is good. Like,
just make sure it's clean of organics.
Could I put it?
Wash it off.
Yeah. I have a compost tumbler. Could I put it in there? Yeah. Will it not get hot enough?
It'll just take longer to break down because it'll just stay in there longer. Okay. With your tumbler, unless you break it down and like cut it up into like smaller pieces, then it'll break down faster. Okay. That's the problem. But
we
a lot
will
of
give so in Andrew's Keensburg they shred material, and, so and you can you, go to his organic tumbler. Sorry, right. I just want to tell the fans that you can go by Andrew's house and put stuff in his tumbler. At any time.
I mean, somebody's got to. I keep forgetting it exists. So,
but damn, Will, that's crazy. That was a bombshell you just dropped.
Wow.
But there are ways to do it, and A1 Organics is very good at it. They have a way that they make sure that it gets composted. It has to be broken down to smaller pieces, because once it's smaller pieces, then it breaks down much faster. So they shred. And what they do is they bring it in, they put it through a shredder. It breaks that material down to smaller sizes so that when it goes into the windrow, it's in the material, it stays in the material, and it breaks down much faster because it's smaller.
Katie and I are like nuts about recycling and trying to do it as good as possible. Would it be helpful for us to cut up those organic compost, you know, into smaller pieces or no?
It's getting processed, so it doesn't really matter if you do it or if A1 does it. So
okay. Cool.
But I know I wanted to touch on this because I know we have to wrap it up here soon. But there are companies that are taking plastic in and putting it back through a combustion process and turning it back into fuel. United has invested $50 million in Fulcrum Bioenergy. BP has invested $50 million. So there are companies trying to find end of life for the plastic. And one way is turning it back into jet fuel. So Fulcrum Bioenergy has approved the technology. They have proven that they can do it. It's just a matter of getting everyone on board and building the facilities around the country, because logistics is the killer in recycling. If it had, like we are in Colorado, it's really tough to get recyclables to a place that recycles them because we're so far away from anything. Andrew said, like, you leave Chicago, you don't see anything till you get to us. It's that way. I mean, it's just very far.
And you have to truck this shit.
And it costs money to truck it or put it on a rail or things of this nature cost money. And that's what I was saying in the beginning of the show. Like, if there's no money in it, no one's going to do it. No one's going to be like, yes, I'm saving the world and I lost my savings.
let me ask you this. It seems to me, and you go there all the time, that Europe's much better at this, correct?
Yes. And the reason for that is because there's no landfills.
There's no landfills in Europe?
Here in Colorado. Land is so expensive in Europe that it doesn't make sense to build a landfill. Everything has to be recycled. Now, saying that, though, countries like Sweden, they have waste to energy plants. So they buy a lot of waste out of Europe and burn it in their waste to energy because they don't create enough waste to fuel the plants. So they're bringing in waste from out of the country.
Wow.
The other thing too is they're 15 years ahead of us in technology. That's why I sell European equipment, because we go over to a big show called IFAT, which is in Munich, and it's every single recycler manufacturer in the world. And it's a huge show. There's probably 180,000 people at it.
You should go to these parties. Holy shit. I mean, the after parties.
It's called a disco, Andrew. It's a disco.
I was hanging out with these guys at C&D, just getting bombed, just getting absolutely hammered.
Yeah. All right. I used to be way skinnier before I got into this industry, and that's mainly because of the drink.
That is crazy.
It's the salesmen that have to eat the organics that you don't wash off of your plastic. So Will's just going to take that on the chin.
So
there are companies out there that are finding solutions. And with Europe being so far ahead of us, we're constantly looking to Europe for what the next technology is, what the next groundbreaking. Another company based out of the Netherlands Germany, is Biofabric. So they have a smaller system that can go in the back of like large manufacturers, someone like an Amazon or a Walmart or things of that nature. You can put plastic into it and you can make essentially usable mobile marine diesel. So then you can sell marine diesel back to like the ports. You can sell it to, you know, any boating marinas, things of that nature.
To the commercial fishing industry.
To the commercial fishing
full
industry.
Circle.
So why is it such a disaster then if this is like doable? Because it's not.
It's what the media wants you to think. It's clickbait. It's clickbait. Oh my God, we're going to die. No, we're not. We got it. It's all just be cool, baby. Be cool. Like,
wait, so that's what you're telling our listeners, is that it's all fine. Yeah. Just keep recycling.
Yeah. Just we're on it. We got it. We're taking care of it.
Well, this has been a hell of an
you
episode.
You are a good
we'll
salesman.
Save the world.
Roller coaster. What a roller coaster.
I love it.
But the biggest thing is education. If just wash out your products, try and be cognizant of what you're putting in what bin. Don't just like, oh, who cares? It goes into the black bin. It goes in the black bin. I never see it again. That has a very long road until it's recycled if it goes in the black bin.
This sounds crazy.
Plastic straws are the fucking worst. Don't use plastic
they're just
straws.
There's no end of life for plastic straws. And that's the problem.
Except for a necklace for a turtle.
You're weighing them down.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This is perhaps very naive of me, but I always kind of assumed that recycling programs were just kind of benevolent programs run by the city. Like, oh yeah, like the city of Denver just has this kind of, I wonder if, and this is sad, but I think it would probably be true, if part of educating people in capitalist America would be like, hey, this is a very lucrative industry that people are like making money on. When you recycle, people are making money. It's like a big business. If people might respond sadly better to that than this idea that it's like, oh, it's a bunch of volunteers down next to the dump, hand cranking the shit into new bottles or something. I wonder if that might help as well. Because I
mean,
think
there's every single MRF in every spot of the country has what they call education centers. So they bring in schools, they bring in colleges, they bring in anyone who wants to know how the material's recycled, and they show you essentially the lifespan of a plastic bottle and what it goes through to get to the end of its life. So there is programs available, and I know that people think, oh, it just goes away, but the city does large pilot programs. So the composting program started by Charlotte Pitt was in 2010 and it didn't get approved until almost 2014. So it goes through a very long process of proving that we can process it. We can take it in. There's not too much contamination. There's not a lot of headaches we have to deal with. The logistics work. There's a lot of financial stress testing, if you will, if we can handle
hurdles,
it. Does it make sense? Is there an ROI on the equipment that we buy? And that's what I do most of the time, is prove to guys or girls, whoever owns the system, that this is what the ROI looks like. This is the return on investment. You'll spend $3 to $5 million with me, and in 3 to 4 years, you'll have your money back. And then everything past that point is profit. And a lot of people if they can find end market commodities, it's a no brainer. They're buying wakeboards and boats and hose and all that stuff.
I'm sold. Adam, Ron, we pull our money. We get one of these robots for my backyard. We start an operation.
You want a heavy picker or a fast picker, Andrew? Yeah. Which one's less terrifying for kids?
Seems like a fast pick guy, don't you think?
Yeah, fast pick. And
you are a fast pick guy.
I had a question and now it is evaporating from my mind. Oh, it wasn't a question. It was a statement. I kind of wish that Colorado.
I'm on the edge of my fucking seat over here.
What is it, a city council meeting? I have a question. And now my 3-minute statement.
It's not even a 3-minute statement. Relax. It's just a comment. I wish that Colorado did what San Francisco does, where your landfill bin is tiny. It's like the size of a milk carton. If you want to put shit in the trash, they give you barely any real estate for it. And then everything else is the sortable. It's like you don't give people a choice if they want to sort shit or recycle it or not. They literally don't have the real estate to put shit in the trash.
Well, and that's the thing with San Francisco. The closest landfill is probably 120 miles away. So it doesn't make sense logistically to haul that stuff all the way out to a landfill. So it's
the
same thing.
So that's the city saying, money-wise, we can't afford to haul more trash for you.
Right.
So make this work.
Yeah, and they're very good. San Francisco is one of the leading cities in the country for recycling programs and how they do it. And there's a great company there called Recology that does a lot of the recycling for the city. San Francisco Scavenger, Huskies.
Yeah, they put those huskies out to sea.
It's not a husky. Friend. It's this dog I'm watching. Kiwi, oh. Be cool. All right.
Kiwi.
The dog's name's Kiwi?
Yeah.
Cool, 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 cool.
Wow, this has been so important. I have more questions, but producer Ron said we had to wrap it up.
No, you can ask. Yeah, you want to ask a couple more. Go ahead.
I just have more, like, for me, it's day-to-day shit that I want to do more effectively. Mail, when it comes in, should you rip out the little sleeve that's plastic that you can see the address?
It goes through a processing where that material, that plastic material is pulled out on the front end of a paper mill. You can if you really want to get down and dirty, but honestly, there's processing that allows for that material to come into the stream.
You just save me a lot of time.
Wow. Right. This is right. Huge for him.
I'm sitting there pulling all those little things out, throwing them away. Whoa. Putting the just straight paper.
And the problem is if you do that, Adam, it's so static energy that it'll just stick to something else. And it'll probably never make it to where it's supposed to go, because it probably, most likely, it'll stick to the side of your bin. It'll stick to whatever is in your bin. It's just got so much static energy that it just... It's better to just leave it where it is and let the machine rust.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
When I jumped on the call, you were already talking about this. You mentioned something about how Colorado could create tax incentives to help these programs as well. Is that something that Colorado is like behind on?
No, it's like I said, we're so far away from commodity markets that what I was saying is that if we can get legislation to give tax credits to companies who are essentially taking material in and processing it and making new material out of it. There is a company that's working on taking plastics, any kind of plastics, and they're developing a brick, or it can be anything really, but the brick has...
Like a brick you could build a home with type of...
Exactly. Thing. And it's got a higher density than concrete. So it can handle more pressure. It's, no water can breach it, things of that nature. So there's plenty of things coming up that you'll start to see. Like, I mean, if you think about it, plastic decks, Trex deck. I mean, that material takes a lot of plastic that is, coming out of the waste stream, and they're building, deck material out of it.
What's the best American city at recycling? San Fran? Who crushes it? And where does Denver rank? I know we're not good. Like,
rank every city right now. Top 50, go.
Top 100 cities recycling.
I mean,
go.
When they look at like who, I mean, if you think of New York City, honestly, because there is no, I mean, they're hauling waste all the way into Pennsylvania from New York City. So there are massive facilities in Brooklyn that are processing, and New York City probably has the most recycling facilities per capita.
Wow. Crazy.
That's the same thing. There's no landfills close. So everything has to have an end of life. So they're very cognizant of, like you said. But to answer your question, Andrew, you can call 311 and request a smaller black bin. You don't need to have the big one.
If ass you're is ever recycling. Berkeley, I'm talking about my neighbors. I'm trying to force them to.
Godspeed, sir.
Well, I mean, this has been really helpful, Will. I think we probably should wrap it up. So
okay. No worries.
Burn the landfills in your city because they're poison, and just don't give them the option. That's your main tip. Go burn the landfills. And take the caps off your plastic and wash that food off.
Well, thank you so much, Will. This was very informative.
Thanks for having me. I was really excited to do this. So
it's refreshing to get the facts for once. Wow.
I know. Ben is so full of shit. And to have someone here who knows stuff and is not just like guessing, but confidently guessing to try to fool you.
All right, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thank you for actually trying to save the world versus us bullshitting each other.
Yeah, for sure.
Good job. Good job, Will.
And congrats on having a job, period. Wow. It's pretty inspiring.
Which one? I've got multiple.
And if you're listening to this, and if you've ever heard any of our other episodes and you wish that we had chatted with a professional about it, let us know. Hit us up on social media or on Patreon, wherever you hear this, and we could try to find other pros out there.
Well, yeah. Thanks so much for listening to this. Will, thanks for being here with us. We'll be back next week with a regular episode full of Ben Roy's ignorant bullshit. But we really appreciate you being here and being so professional, Will. Until then, Andrew, you want to take it?
Play us out, Charlie.
Did I do it right?
You nailed it. Swish.